important that we have that kind of stipulation. So John Jones comes into the county planning department and says, I want to build a house in the EFU zone. And the county planning director said, says, you can't build a non-farmhouse out there. And he said, well, but you could build a farmhouse. And so he says, all right, I'll build a farmhouse. How do I build a farmhouse? And at least in our county, the answer is then, well, you just go and get a farm management person to write up a farm plan and bring it in and we'll approve it. We're saying that in order that the integrity of the EFU zone be preserved, those homes which really are there as rural residential homes but are called farm homes for the purposes of getting their building permit, instead of doing it that way, they need to somehow indicate that they are producing 20,000 gross income, or else they live in a mobile home until they can give evidence that the income is actually there. The last recommendation in this section would establish in each county a panel of commercial farmers named by the Board of Commissioners to review conditional use and land division applications in EFU zones. Now, we understand that the whole concept of the hearings officer, which we also would be satisfied with, has been reviewed at least in the House E&E Committee, and I'm not sure if your committee has looked at it yet also. That is expensive and requires budget dollars. This would be a way of taking the political pressure off county commissioners by having commercial farmers do that review, and they would, in effect, function on quasi-judicial decisions as a hearings officer. And the decisions from them would then go directly to LUBA or whatever is there if LUBA is replaced. We would not be adverse to having one of those persons, one of five, let's say, be a consumer person. And we suggest also that the names of the commercial farmers from whom the Board of Commissioners would choose could be submitted by the local extension. Jim Smart, Polk County cherry farmer, has been particularly concerned about the Farm Value Assessment Program. You may know Jim from his years on the Land Conservation and Development Commission. He was the first farmer on that original commission and helped to draft Goal 3 with Senator Day. And so he's going to review with you our concern about the Farm Value Assessment Program.
See, we're working off of this sheet.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name for the record. And
my name is Jim Smart. I'm a resident of Polk County. And my background, I was one of the original appointees on the Land Conservation Development Commission and served 4.5 years. I was the farmer on the commission. And I was a part of the adoption of the goals and guidelines. That is, we did it. And the proposal is to eliminate rural land eligibility for special farm value assessment unless the land is zoned EFU. Owners of non-EFU land now on farm value assessment have 3 years to retain eligibility by obtaining exclusive farm use zoning. It's generally referred to by people who are not that familiar with the statute. Either you're under deferral or you're under EFU. And the proper technical approach is the special farm use assessment, and land that is not in an EFU zone is referred to as unzoned land, which has been extended, this coverage. But this has been one of the most difficult problems that we've run into. We ran into when I was on the commission, and it's still there. And it's the attractive option of being able to divide the land into small parcels under deferral, but because of the very loose definition of what constitutes change of use, nobody ever pays the deferred tax. Well, you can see with the more tight restrictions of the exclusive farm use zone versus the looser application of deferral, as it's generally referred to, this is where the battle starts. And the legislature has been pointed out to over the years, but it's become well established that the option is there. I think that the question on agricultural land would have been laid to rest a long time ago if there was only one option, and that was either the to qualify for the special farm tax treatment during an EFU zone period. And so this is the suggestion, and to give people time to adjust to it, is to make that the only option available. And I think that a lot of these arguments will be settled at this point. Now, the problems that arose came about when Senate Bill... Well, prior to the enactment of Senate Bill 10, which preceded Senate Bill 100, the change of assessment practices, the assessors began to assess agricultural land on the basis of representative sales of road frontage. Well, a farmer with a mile or two of road frontage suddenly found himself with a horrendous tax bill. And while it was not zoned, the same approach, the treatment that an EFU zone would receive, was extended to that class of unzoned land. Then Senate Bill 10 directed the counties zone themselves, and many of these counties took one look at the problems that they were going to be associated with to really do the job, and zoned the entire counties to five-acre parcels. Then along comes LCDC with a direction to preserve agricultural land, and you sure don't preserve it by cutting it up in five-acre parcels. And so we're accused then of downzoning the results of Senate Bill 10. And so this whole complex problem has floated around through, one, the direction to preserve agricultural land, and on the other hand, the state was, in effect, setting up incentives to cut it up, has been the problem. Now, I think I pretty well... The next is to establish an income test for farm value assessment in the EFU zone. Land must produce at least 500 in sales, subtracting the purchase price of livestock. There have been lots of complaints when I was on the commission. I've heard it since, that you buy a calf, you pay $350 for the calf, you sell it for $500, and you've taken care of your income requirements on 5 acres under the present statute. And require county assessor to grant farm value assessment to waste land and land temporary lying fallow that is part of the farm otherwise eligible for farm value assessment. Is that going to be in the our proposal?
The third part there, that is now, as we understand it, in House Bill 2617 and Senate Bill 335. We have not submitted a draft legislation on this third part requiring the county assessor to grant farm value assessment, since it already has been drafted in those other bills, but it's a position that we support.
Yes. This has been a running source of argument, is the general open land that holds the rest of the farm together, or wasteland, and gets separated out in an exclusive farm use zone and taxed differently. I believe that covers about all that I need to cover here. Glad to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Any questions at this point? Thank you very much.
Let's then continue on the last part of the proposal. The improvements to statewide regulation of land divisions and EFU zones. I'd like to have you make a correction on line 2 of the first part of the proposal and the same correction on line 2 of the second part of the proposal. Change that 2 years to 3 years. As we drafted the legislation, we would like to ask that you amend the state subdivision law to provide that parcels in EFU zones remaining in contiguous ownership more than 3 years following creation by partition are no longer valid for land use purposes. There are, for instance, in many counties, old subdivisions, fruit farms that were done very early this century. They're still in the books. And we think that for good land use planning purposes, the vacation of these ownership lines would be very helpful. The second part would amend the subdivision law to require vacation of parcel and lot lines created more than 3 years prior to the effective date of the act between contiguous parcels in the same ownership. Now, there are going to be some lot lines that are necessary for tax purposes because a service district or a school district might run through a farm. But other than that, at least as far as planning purposes, those lines would be vacated. There's one point that...
Lois, that's not in your... in your omnibus proposal, is there?
Yes.
You did that, this part
we
is.
We got that to you a little late. You may not have seen that, but it is, we
was that last, drafted. Was that that last packet?
Okay. Yes, we do have legislation drafted on that. There's one thing that we neglected to tell you about the marginal lands. Hector, if you want to add that now about this.
Well, there's a number of things really about the marginal land proposal that you haven't heard yet, but I think the one thing that you need to know is that the way we visioned this thing, that it was not fair to put this thing in the middle of the ball game of getting the lands approved, the plans approved. So what we've stipulated is that all counties have to go in and get their plans acknowledged one time before they can apply our marginal lands concept. And at the first review after that time, then they can consider this and go back and look at both all their lands that might possibly fit under this category rather than some other category and put it in at that time.
In no way do we want to delay or put any occasion to slow down that adoption of comprehensive plans. We think it's important that gets through. But after that plan has been approved, then the county can look at it. We also don't want the marginal land designation to be put on a site-specific basis. It needs to be done in a legislative way, reviewing the whole plan. We're ready to receive additional questions.
Questions at this point?
Or if you would like to go through, did you get copies of the bill made? If you want to
well, this actually, what we've got here is just part of it because you added those things. And I guess what I'd like to do if there aren't any objections from the committee, I'd like to conceptually that we have the down in LC the draft for these concepts in bill form, and I'd like to amend it into 237 out of the. Joint Interim Committee, all the concepts in 237 are, and that is an EFU bill, recognizing that doesn't constitute support for part or all of this. So are there any objections to making that amendment? Okay, so ordered. So for those in the audience, it will be Senate Bill 237, which will embody this. And we will have copies of the whole LC draft in our office in 331, tomorrow afternoon, and then on Monday we're going to have a hearing on 234, which is an EFU bill, and then also the first public hearing on Senate Bill 237. And I think, Lois, what I'd rather do is have you wait till that time when we have the actual bill, whole bill before us, and then we'll have you run through that, and then we'll start our public hearing. Thank you very much.
Chairman, I just want to say, as someone new really to the details of this issue, this is one of the better presentations from both the department and these people that I've heard.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to echo that and also say that I think that many of the questions you raise, and we'll be able to see the specific detail when it's worked out by legislative council, but I think you're going a long ways to resolving much of the conflict that we've heard about for so many years, and that I think that idea of hearing panel or whatever it's called is a hell of a good idea.
It may speak very well to the question you raised.
Yes,
a while ago.
It might.
I thought about that. At that time. I wanted to call your attention also to the fact of the variety of people on our executive board and our advisory board, simply because. The variety of crops, the variety of farm operations that we represent are so diverse. And believe me, we didn't come to this conclusion in an easy way. It was hammered out with lengthy sessions, and nobody is 100% happy with it because everyone was compromising to try and get the best possible thing that we could together support. And so we hope it is a reasonable solution to some of the criticisms which have come, and we certainly will be happy to work with you in any way we can.
Thank you, Lois. That concludes the informational hearing on now Senate Bill 237. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 612. And Senator Cohen isn't here, but I'll have Mr. Churchill here. Courtney, you want to get Jack Churchill? He's out. And Todd, why don't you run through the bill for us while we're waiting?
Willamette River Basin, as I guess everybody knows, contains most of Oregon's population and industry, yet may not be subject to the amount of coordinated planning necessary to fully develop and protect the river's resources. Senate Bill 612 would create the Willamette River Basin Planning Commission, composed of 9 unpaid citizens. The commission would be granted authority to appoint technical advisory committees to identify current federal and state policies for use of the basin's resources and to develop alternative policies for that use. The commission would develop a long-range management plan for the Willamette Basin to allow optimum development while protecting in-stream uses of the water. Some of the state and federal programs and policies that the commission would evaluate to accomplish its mandate are listed in Section 5. The commission would be housed in the Water Resource Department offices. It would need an unspecified general fund appropriation to cover traveling and other administrative expenses. Okay.
Ms. Churchill?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jack Churchill. I live at 788 Cabana Lane, Lake Oswego. I teach water policy at Portland State University. I believe the committee has a copy of my statement. I might just go through it. I am glad to be here today to support SB 612 to enact a Willamette River Planning Commission. Whether we share the view that the Willamette River is well managed today, I think all Oregonians take pride in the collective job we have done in cleaning up the Willamette and restoring fish runs. But can we rest on past achievements? The answer is no. Many experts feel that in terms of quality, the river is again on the decline. There are no clear goals and no integrated management strategy to accommodate a growing population, industrial and agricultural uses, and expanding demands for the use of the waters for fisheries, for recreation, and for additional loadings of pollutants. This bill would establish a commission of citizens to review our current progress, identify current problems, and estimate future uses, and develop an integrated management strategy for attaining future goals for both groundwater and surface waters, and to combine our strategies for quantity and quality management. Let's face it, approximately two-thirds of Oregon's 2.6 million people live in the Willamette Basin. Population estimates indicate that we'll add a million more during the next 20 years. The question that this bill addresses is this: do we have a management strategy and an administrative capacity to assure the residents living in the valley in the year 2005, perhaps 20 years from now, of an adequate water supply of good enough quality to accommodate these expanding uses? The answer, as of now, is plainly no. So before we create another crisis for ourselves on the Willamette Basin, let's stop and have a good public review of where we are and where we need to be going. Let me briefly mention five areas of concern. One is to provide assurances of the security over time of use of water from Willamette Valley Corps of Engineer projects for fishery and pollution control and recreation needs. Most of us have assumed that the minimum flows provided by the Corps projects will always be there to dilute the normal flow of the Willamette in summer months and provide adequate water for fisheries and recreation. Such is not the case. Let me quote from a DEQ paper of January 12, 1981. Quote, Oregon's presently recognized beneficial water uses for fisheries, recreation, and water quality controls in the Willamette River may face an uncertain future due to dual but unequal resource management authorities exercised by the Oregon Water Policy Review Board and the U.S. Corps of Engineers. End quote. The conclusion of the report, of the DEQ report concludes, the congressionally authorized purposes of the Willamette Basin storage projects are flood control, power generation, irrigation, and navigation. Benefits for fish, recreation, water supply, and water quality improvements, pollution abatement, are recognized as incidental to the authorized project purposes. To the citizens of the state of Oregon, these incidental benefits are extremely important and their continuation must be assured. Substantial monies have been and are being spent to enhance fishery production, provide for recreation, and to assure water quality to support these and other uses, all in reliance of continuation of a minimum stream flow of 6,000 cubic feet per second at Salem. Let me say that just I think that although the Water Resources Board and the Environmental Quality Commission have been reviewing this and with the Corps of Engineers, I think that we better face up to the fact that if we're going to get a fair deal in reauthorization, we better take some action and have a public discussion of this issue in a broad way while Senator Hatfield is still in the position of the United States Senate to get us the best possible deal in reauthorization. The second point I want to make is that the future economic development of the Willamette Valley Basin depends on resolving the issue of reducing risk to present and future urban and industrial and agricultural investments. And we talk about economic development, and I think that the long-range planning for the Willamette Basin is probably the most important issue that we need to face in this state. Third, we need to relate in a meaningful way our water use planning with our land use planning of the counties under LCDC. We need this both in relation to groundwater and surface water. And we need to integrate, for instance, the planning and management strategies for the greenway in the wilderness areas. And I think these maps that I've presented here from the 208 assessment work back a few years ago indicate, if you look on the Willamette Basin, both the issues relating to sedimentation. And sedimentation is a good one. It's where there are a multiplicity of agencies and individual users that have created sediment problems, or at least nature combined with man have created sediment problems which impair one or more uses established in our water basin program. And some of them are critical, and some of them are just moderately impaired. You take a look back on this room here, and you'll see where the combined non-point source activity has greatly impacted the Willamette Basin. Okay, so we need to take a look at this from the upper part of the watershed to the mouth of the river. And I think that our past planning perhaps has taken a piece of this at a time. And fifthly, I think we need to take a leading decision role in meeting the fishery and water-related energy goals of the Northwest Regional Power Planning Council and also the future planning of the Corps of Engineers in this basin. And I believe that perhaps bringing back or doing again what we did in 1937 under Governor Martin, establishing a citizen commission to take a long-range view of this in a year and a half's time, would provide a public focus and a public understanding of the real long-range development issues that we need to face in what I consider a Willamette Basin coming under increasing pressure, where we already have a lot of problems we're not adequately dealing with today. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd be glad to answer any questions the committee may have.
Another question? Thank you. Let's see, Mr. Bailey?
Mr. Kitzhaber, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bud Bailey. I'm the assistant administrator of the Division of Soil and Water Conservation here in Salem. The report, the statement that I'm going to read to you was prepared by Charles Lyles, the administrator. The State Department of Agriculture, Division of Soil and Water Conservation, is quite interested in the concept of a Willamette River Basin Planning Commission, as proposed in Senate Bill 612. Soil and water are the basic resources of the state of Oregon and the foundation of the state's economy. Our principal economic activities are agriculture, timber, and tourism, each of which is dependent upon soil and water for its very existence. The water and related land resources are what has made Willamette Basin the economic center of Oregon. All of man's activities are irrevocable tied to these precious natural resources. It is our respectful suggestion that the studies of the proposed commission begin with the information developed by the Willamette Basin Task Force, which completed a comprehensive Type 4 River Basin study in 1969. This intensive and extensive study, carried on by a combined task force of federal and state agencies, is contained in a 14-volume report, copies of which must be available in the Oregon State Library and Oregon Water Resources Department and other offices within the state. We have a complete set of reports in our office, which we would make available if needed. With this basic information available to the proposed commission, it should be practical for them to review the data and make adjustments for development which has occurred since completion of the study in 1969. The Department of Agriculture is willing to provide as much assistance as possible within our limited manpower and budget to assist in preparing an updated report. And I have with me the summary of the report. And don't ask me any questions that I haven't read.
Okay, are there... can we get a copy? Where could we obtain a copy of that summary?
Of the summary?
Yeah.
You can get it right from me.
Very good. We ask you the first question you had the answer to. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wanted to say anything on this proposal? Okay. All right. We will close the hearing for now on Senate Bill 612. And we have Friday, John Lobdell for our committee. Is there anything else on Friday? No. Okay, and then Monday we have the two AFU bills and the first public hearing on 237. Any other business? Stand adjourned.